From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, do you know what today is? Take a guess. It's National Voter Registration Day. Why is that important? Well, because if you're not registered, you can't vote. And if you can't vote, someone other than you will be a part of shaping your future and the future of this country. We'll talk about it later with Donald Palmer of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Also, the Senate is now poised to move forward on confirming a Supreme Court nomination prior to the November 3rd election, according to reports. And the Democrats are saying that if Republicans go forward, nothing is off the table if Democrats take control of the Senate after the November election. What does that mean? And will Republicans back down in the face of such threats? South Dakota Senator John Thune, a member of the Senate leadership team, is here with the latest from Capitol Hill in just a moment. And talk about a contrast. The Obama administration prosecuted Christians, but the Trump administration is protecting Christians by actually taking those who discriminate against them to court. We'll talk about it with the general counsel of the EEOC later here on Washington Watch. And why is the Black Lives Matter organization taking information down from their website? Good question. We'll talk with Mike Gonzalez at the Heritage Foundation here on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And folks, you know what tonight is? I know today is Voter Registration Day, but you know what tonight is? Tonight is the opening night of the Values Voter Summit. That's right. We've gone virtual. I've been talking about this for several weeks now because of the restrictions here in D.C. We can only have 250 people in one place, and you know that's not enough for the Values Voter Summit. So we've taken this year's summit online. It's virtual. You can register. We have over 7,000. We're pressing up to 10,000 people have registered and will be joining. You don't want to miss out. Tonight, Sissy Graham Lynch will kick us off. Senator Josh Hawley will be joining us. Dr. Al Mohler, Ali Stuckey, Congressman Chip Roy, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, Walker Wildman, Dave Hoppe, Gary Bauer, Andrew Brunson, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, John Barsa at the USAID, and Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina, all on tonight. That's just tonight. And we've got four nights of the Values Voter Summit. So be sure and tune in, 8 p.m. Eastern time. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Whew, that was a lot. All right, following the passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Friday, the process for filling the court vacancy is moving forward in keeping with the Constitution and Senate history, as we discussed yesterday. Now, Senate Democrats, as I mentioned, have said if Republicans move forward filling the vacancy before the election, that nothing will be off the table if they're able to regain control of the Senate in November. Now, what does that mean? Well, joining me now to talk about all of this is U.S. Senate Majority Whip John Thune of South Dakota. He's a member of the Senate leadership team. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Always good to be with you.
All right, let me just start with the most basic. I mean, reports suggest that the Senate Republicans have said the president makes a nomination, we're ready to move forward. Is that the case?
That is correct, yes. And we expect that he will make that nomination. I think he's announced on Saturday, but certainly before the end of the week.
And the expectation, or I should say anticipation, is that there will be a vote in the Senate, and you should know because you're the one that counts noses, prior to the election. Is that the goal?
Well, the question on timing, when the vote will occur, Tony, will probably depend a little bit on how expeditiously the process can play out, have the hearing and check all the boxes. But there certainly is enough time, in my view, yes, to be able to complete that process and have a vote before the election. We have people who have slightly different views about the timing when the vote should occur, but that's certainly what I would like to see happen.
Well, it certainly would be within historic precedent of the runways in which we've had Supreme Court justices nominated and confirmed. So it would not be setting any precedent to do it within that time frame.
No, actually, I mean, if you look historically and not, you know, I'm talking some fairly recent, maybe not so recent history as well, but there are plenty, there's ample examples of where this has occurred in a time frame that is certainly fits within what we're looking at between now and November. And if you go back to Sandra Day O'Connor, 33 days. Justice Stevens was 19 days. That was almost a record. Of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in 42 days. John Roberts, when he was Chief Justice, 24 days. So there are lots of examples, Tony, of where if there is a path forward and not, you know, dilatory tactics employed by the other side or roadblocks put up where we can complete this in a timely way. And I think probably, depending on what we know about the potential nominees the president would put forward, they've been vetted before. We're talking about a couple of people, obviously, who are already serving on the appellate court and very recently went through the process. So I think the vetting process, the background, all that has to be done, seems to me at least, could be completed in a pretty timely way that would enable us, if the will is there to do it, to complete action to have a vote before November.
So if my math serves me right here, and I could be wrong because that wasn't one of my strong subjects, we're looking at about 37 days. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
That'd be about right. I mean, you're looking at a little over 5 weeks. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's clearly within the parameter that you set out there. So not breaking any new ground. But let me shift gears here, Senator Thune, to some of the statements that have been made on the other side, as if this is something new, never been thought of before, when in fact the history of the Senate shows that 29 times we've had vacancies in election year. And in almost every case in which the president's party controlled the Senate, he was successful with his nomination, I think, all but one time. But let's talk about the threats being made by the Democrats. What do they mean that nothing is off the table if they take control of the Senate? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, they're trying to threaten and scare people that if we undertake our constitutional duty, obligation, responsibility, you know, the Constitution obviously calls on the president to nominate members to the Supreme Court and the Senate to provide its advice and consent, ultimately to confirm or reject. That's the constitutional role for the United States Senate. What the Democrats are saying is if we undertake our constitutional role and actually process a nominee this year under this president, that they are going to retaliate next year with all kinds of shenanigans, to include packing the Supreme Court. Something that was attempted by FDR back in the 30s, but unsuccessfully, but something that would just be totally unprecedented. And when they say nothing is off the table, there are just a lot of fear-mongering and threats that are being posed by Democrats that it's hard to fathom right now how they could come to the conclusion that because the Senate Republicans are carrying out under the Constitution the thing that I think people expect us to be doing, that somehow that warrants their retribution, and retribution on a scale that would be completely unprecedented in American history. But that's what they're threatening. They've made that very clear. Some of the stuff, you know, these are threats that they've been making for some time now, so we don't view a lot of this as new. You know, they're talking about adding seats to the Senate by adding, you know, D.C. statehood, Puerto Rican statehood. You're talking about four new Democrat senators there. If you did pack the Supreme Court, if they would have to nuke the legislative filibuster, in other words, do away with the provision that requires bipartisan cooperation in the Senate in order to do that. But they could. They could pack the Supreme Court, and they are talking openly about doing that.
Senator, don't misunderstand what I'm going to say here, because I do not think in any form or fashion should the Republicans hit reverse or even pause in the face of such threats. But I will say this. I think as you pointed out very clearly, this is not new. These are not new threats. And I think if history's taught us anything, that we should listen to what people are saying, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And this is what they're thinking. And this is what they may ultimately do if they have the power to do so. So I actually think the American people should be listening, regardless of the Supreme Court debate that is about to ensue. This is what they would decide to do if they can't get their way in the courts, is diluting the advancements made under this Senate, under this administration, in terms of putting constitutionalists onto the courts.
No, that's right, Tony. And this ought to be a voting issue for people this year, because I don't think these are idle threats. I think that they fully would intend to follow through. And the reason I say that, I don't think they have a lot of choice. Chuck Schumer, who runs he's the de facto leader of the Democrats in the Senate, But for all intents and purposes, I think that the real leader and the de facto Speaker of the House right now is AOC. And that band of very far left representatives in the House, and there's a radical group in the country today who literally will do whatever it takes to get their way. And I think we have to take these threats very seriously, because I think the Democrats here in the Senate are going to be under so much pressure next year to try and undo a lot of the things that President Trump and Republicans in Congress have done that they're not going to be able to resist those that temptation and that pressure. So I think that people, when they go to vote this year, need to think long and hard about what they're going to be getting. And, you know, I think it's interesting that former Vice President Biden has not put out a list of potential Supreme Court nominees. I think that speaks volumes, because he can't afford to. He can't afford to alienate the far left. And if he puts, forth far left nominees, obviously the people in the middle. And so I think they're in a very tough spot right now. But people in this country should be, make no mistake about it. These threats, I think, need to be taken seriously. There is a clear choice in this election. There will be a clear contrast. Elections are about differences, and the differences could not be more clear. And I think the American people need to think about what they would be getting if they vote for Joe Biden, a Democrat Senate, and a Democrat House of Representatives. It will be Katie bar the door.
I think you're absolutely right when it comes to the list. I think there's a reason Joe Biden doesn't want to provide a list, in contrast to Donald Trump. But I want another issue that I want to bring up as it pertains to these court nominees. One of the contenders, Amy Coney Barrett, was confirmed previously for the appellate court. And in the judicial hearing, yesterday I said it was Boxer, but it's Dianne Feinstein. I've got a short clip I want to play, because I want to know, is this what we need to prepare for? Play that clip for us, Bobby.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you.
Speaking of her Catholic faith, I mean, it was clearly the Democrats have been on this anti-religious, religious test, a reverse religious test. Do we anticipate that that's what we're going to see in the nomination, in the confirmation process?
Yeah, I don't think there is anything, Tony, that more clearly crystallizes the incredible clash of worldviews that we see kind of every day here in Washington, but really hyped up during a Supreme Court nomination, and that's what you're looking at. I mean, what she basically said, and this was when Amy Coney Barrett was up for the appellate court, the Seventh Circuit, that her deeply held faith should be disqualifying from service on the court. I mean, it's stunning, and that's really scary about what we're up against here. But we're going to move forward, and the president's going to send us a great nominee, and we're going to process that nominee and fill this important vacancy.
All right, we're going to be tracking very, very closely. Senator John Thune, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate your leadership on Capitol Hill.
All right, good to be with you. Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away, because we're coming back and more contrast. When you contrast the Obama administration with the Trump administration, when it comes to the free exercise of religion, the Obama administration, basically persecuted, maybe I should say prosecuted, really the same thing. The Trump administration actually defending Christians in court. We're going to talk about it next with the EEOC. Don't go away. Are you concerned with the state of our nation? And when looking at what's going on in our culture, do you wonder, what can I do? For the past 15 years, FRC Action has hosted Values Voter Summit, an event for people like you who want to shape the culture so that all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. And this Values Voter Summit is going viral, so everyone can tune in and be encouraged to pray, to vote, and to stand in these significant times. Past speakers included President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Dr. Ben Carson, and Dana Lash. Register today for your free digital pass and join us virtually from September the 22nd to the 25th from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Don't miss out. Remember, pray, vote, stand.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. The Values Voters Summit starts tonight. Tune in. Be a part of it. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Find out more. Elections have consequences. All right? Of course, that's the theme of the Value Voters Summit, America, Pray, Vote, Stand. And here's one of those situations where that is so clear in the consequences of the last election. I mean, we talk about it, but the religious freedom issues, the life issues, so many things going on. Well, here's something that you probably won't read about in the newspaper, you won't hear about it, but you're going to hear about it here on Washington Watch. On September 15th, the EEOC, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, filed suit against the Kroger Company, that Kroger's grocery store, largest supermarket in the U.S., charging that they violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Right. In this case, the Kroger grocery store in Conway, Arkansas, issued new aprons to employees that featured a small rainbow-colored heart emblem. Now, two employees perceived that this was an endorsement of the LGBT movement. Now, they objected to this, to wearing it, on religious grounds. It was incompatible with their deeply held Orthodox religious views. They requested a religious accommodation that would either allow them to wear a different apron or to wear their name tag over the emblem. But Kroger refused this accommodation and ended up firing the two employees. Now, here's where the EEOC comes in. The EEOC filed suit on behalf of the employees who were denied this religious accommodation. Joining me now is the general counsel for the EEOC, Sharon Fass Gustafson. Sharon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, happy to be here.
So let me just make sure, did I get the facts of the case correct?
It sounds like you did a really good job summarizing those allegations, yes.
So let me just start there with some basic questions. What needs to be present for the EEOC to pursue a case of religious discrimination like this?
It's important to remember when you're talking about religious discrimination that there are really two aspects to it. The first is that just like race discrimination or sex discrimination, an employer cannot treat an employee or an applicant less well because of that employee's religion, religious beliefs or practices. But there's a second aspect to it as well, and that is that if the applicant or employee has a religious belief or practice that requires some kind of religious accommodation, the law requires the employer to give that accommodation to the employee unless it would present some sort of undue hardship to the business. So once those things are present, the employee can file a charge of discrimination if they believe they've been discriminated against.
Yeah, so like in this case, they just simply said, can I have a different apron or can I cover this up? I mean, that doesn't seem like to be an outrageous request.
Well, one of the things that I believe the courts are going to look at in terms of whether there's an undue hardship is what cost there would be to the employer to make the accommodation. And in this case, it was a zero-cost accommodation that was requested.
So what would you say then were the religious beliefs that you are defending in this particular case with Kroger's or with the two employees?
Yes, these two employees, Ms. Lawson and Ms. Rickard, both had religious beliefs that homosexual acts are sins and that they could not do anything to celebrate that or to endorse it. And so they felt that they could not wear these emblems without violating their religious beliefs. So that's the issue here in this case.
Now, I want to be very clear here that the EEOC, if there is discrimination against someone based upon their gender or their sexual of their sex, I mean, if they were fired unjustly, the EEOC will defend them. So that's
absolutely
clear, and there's the record's very clear on that. But what's been missing is a defense, I should say, in the previous administration, those that were exercising or seeking accommodation for the religious beliefs. That was, I think, is something new. Now, let me ask you this. Now that the lawsuit has been filed, what are the next steps in the legal process here in this particular case?
Well, the case is very new. It was recently filed. And so, you know, the lawsuit gets served on the defendant and they file an answer. And then we go into a period called discovery, where each side gets to ask questions of each other and then present the case to the court. And the court decides whether the case is worthy of a jury trial. And then if so, there will be a trial.
Now, am I correct in that you sought to mediate this situation before filing suit? Did you try to resolve this outside of court?
Yes, we do it through a process called conciliation. The statute requires conciliation to be done, and it was done here in this case.
But no, nothing was resolved?
Not yet. It has not been resolved yet. Of course, that can still happen even after lawsuits are filed. Sometimes cases are resolved without trials, even after the complaints have been filed.
So, Sharon, let me ask you one final question. What should corporations be aware of when it comes to religious discrimination from the federal government standpoint?
Well, I think employers need to realize that this is a protection similar to protections against race discrimination and sex discrimination, and employers are more familiar with those. They are familiar, too, with religious discrimination cases. And, you know, there was a case back in 2015, the Abercrombie case, where somebody, an applicant, was protected when she had to wear a hijab in her job. And so that's sort of a famous religious discrimination case. But employers need to be always asking themselves, is this an accommodation that we can provide, or is it an undue hardship? And if the answer is it's not an undue hardship, then they have to provide the accommodation. And I just believe in our pluralistic society, we as Americans know how to be good at this. We know how to protect people on the basis of all of these different things at the same time. And I don't think it's going to present a problem. I know that sometimes these things are in tension with each other, but I think employers who think about it carefully will know how to comply with all these various laws at once.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's called getting along. And I think it's giving each other some space and not forcing others to conform to the views that you have, but giving people space.
That's right.
I guess it'd be kind of like, kind of like social distancing, I guess. I don't know. Sharon Fast Gustafson, thanks so much for joining us, and really glad to see the EEOC doing this. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, folks, don't go away. Coming back on the other side of this break, Black Lives Matter, the organization, kind of scrubbing, sanitizing their website, taking some stuff down. Why? We're going to talk about it with Mike Gonzalez at the Heritage Foundation next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
As churches consider gathering again, they should develop plans to reopen and operate according to the guidance of the CDC, along with state and local guidance that does not violate the First Amendment and other religious freedom protections. Family Research Council has a helpful resource with best practices and tips for churches and places of worship to consider when crafting their reopening plans. Romans 13 instructs Christians to be subject to the governing authorities. The civil authorities have a difficult task ahead, and we should seek to be a part of the solution through cooperation and service to our communities. Some states and authorities like Nevada and California are treating religious entities more restrictively than non-religious entities. But as long as restrictions are temporary, applied equally to religious and non-religious gatherings alike, and there is a good reason for putting them in place, government restrictions are not likely to violate religious freedom protections. To learn more and to view this resource, visit frc.org/churchguidelines.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. Be sure and check out the links to your free virtual pass to the Values Voter Summit that starts tonight. Right, polling and the statements from Democratic leaders like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reveal the left's lawlessness is scaring voters away. At the center of this lawlessness is the Marxist organization Black Lives Matter. Now, they're trying to sanitize their origins. It's really interesting. Over the weekend, the organization removed the "what we believe" portion from their website, which spoke of their Marxist roots. Now, but here, there's more. BLM has even more to explain. It has now been revealed that they have connections to the Chinese Communist Party. Joining me now with more is Mike Gonzalez, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks a lot for having me on.
So BLM is in retreat in terms of its Marxist origins, trying to cover their trails.
Yeah, no, they finally realizing. I mean, so Americans, you know, good people. They have good intentions. They were horrified by the manner in which George Floyd died, and they wanted to demonstrate that outrage. But and I think people are beginning to understand that, as opposed to the slogan itself or to the sentiment, the organizations of Black Lives Matter are, you know, as you said, were founded by Marxists, committed Marxists. Marxists were trained in Marxist tactics. They used to speak openly about this, but now that they're realizing that it's not selling so well in America, they're beginning to do the Marxist thing, which is to airbrush history out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like a cat in a sandbox trying to cover their tracks there. But there's something else they're going to have to start covering up, because Alicia Garza, who is, you know, connected, or, you know, one of the co-founders, she's behind the advocacy group Black Future Lab, which is backed by the Chinese Progressive Association, which has connections to the Chinese Communist Party. So, I mean, there's even more connections that they're going to have to explain to the American people.
Well, Alicia Garza is best thought of as sitting atop a worldwide revolutionary empire. She's got many ventures. One of them is the Black Futures Lab, as you said. And if you go to the donate button, you see that it is a fiscally sponsored project of the Chinese Progressive Association of San Francisco. BLM likes to have these arrangements because it affords them flexibility in not disclosing how they spend their money, in what activities they spend their money. The Chinese Progressive Association of San Francisco has been sympathetic to the People's Republic of China from the beginning, has gone to bat for China. For example, this year, back in March, it sent a letter to the Biden campaign saying, look, we back you. We want you to defeat President Trump. But, however, we don't want you to engage at all in any China bashing, quote unquote. These are their words. And if you do criticize China, this could hurt you at the polls. This is what the letter said to the Biden campaign. The Chinese Progressive Association also, in 2017, created a group that sought to curb the Department of Justice investigations of Chinese spying, of China spying by China, right? Because we have to draw a bright distinction here, Tony, between the Chinese government and Chinese Americans who are Americans.
Right.
Americans,
right.
Just like you and me. And in fact, these organizations, these lefty organizations, do not serve the interests of Chinese Americans because they support affirmative action. And one of the greatest sufferers of affirmative action are Chinese Americans, as you well know. So what we can say is that you have this outfit created at the height of the Cultural Revolution, 1972, right in the middle of the Cultural Revolution, Maoist from the beginning, seeking to bring revolution to America, and they have done pro-China things, and they are the fiscal sponsors of one of the ventures of Alicia Garza, one of the BLM ventures.
Mike, you point this out in a piece for the Daily Signal that if this were an organization here in the United States connected to Vladimir Putin and Russia, the media would be all over it. But they've said nothing about this connection between the Communist China and BLM.
The media not only says nothing and doesn't bother to vet these organs. By the way, a paper came out last week that links 95% of the riots to BLM, to the organizations. 95% of the riots to Black Lives Matter, to the organizations. Look, the media doesn't not just vet and do investigations. The media covers for them.
Yeah.
The media says they're not Marxists. PolitiFact had a laughable fact check saying, no. They're not Marxist. 80% of the majority of the people turning out to protest do not associate themselves with Marxist views. And that is actually something I agree with. I think people who are in the streets demonstrating are not probably they may be Marxist. Many young people today are Marxist, but I would imagine the vast majority are not. But what I do say also is that they're being manipulated. The protests are being manipulated by groups created by Marxists, by people who are anti-capitalist. And now the fact that they're purging their website from language, I think they took out every reference to the word comrade. Comrade obviously is a very Russian, very Soviet word, a very communist word. It was a wink to the left, but I think as people begin to see it and realize what was going on, they also excised it from their website.
And that's how the communists, the Marxists work. They try to use the cover of legitimate issues to create dissension in other countries, which is what they're doing here. Mike, we're out of time, but I'm going to revisit this issue later. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
Folks, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain. and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
The history of the United States is preserved in archives, books, and the collective memory of the American people. It is also preserved through monuments and memorials that visually represent the extraordinary history of our nation. To tell these stories and remind ourselves of the importance of these memorials, Family Research Council has a new blog series highlighting the most recognizable and popular monuments in our nation's capital. This series devotes particular attention to the historical and spiritual themes depicted in each monument, sharing some not-so-well-known facts about their history, design, and symbolic meaning that shed light on our nation's deep religious heritage. This series aims to inspire the next generation to see the importance of these monuments and to remind us of the virtues and lessons that they memorialize. To read FRC's Monument Series, visit frcblog.org/monuments. Again, that's frcblog.org/monuments.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, let me remind you, this evening begins the Values Voter Summit. That's right. We're up to about 10,000 folks that have registered for the event. There's still room for you. As I mentioned before, this year it's virtual because we can only have 250 people here in D.C., so we've gone virtual. And now we've got thousands of activists from across the country joining. And you know, to the theme, I'll give you a kind of a sneak preview. This year's theme, America, Pray, Vote, Stand. Well, do you know what today is? It's so appropriate for kicking off the Values Voter Summit. Today is National Voter Registration Day. That's right. Today is National Voter Registration Day. And to join us to talk about this today is Donald Palmer. He is with U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Mr. Palmer, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
So very appropriate. We're kicking off the Values Voter Summit this evening. Today is the National Registration Day, National Voter Registration Day. Explain the purpose. I think it's quite evident, but people need to be reminded they need to register if they're going to vote.
Well, National Voter Registration Day really is a reminder to the citizens that, you know, registration deadlines are quickly approaching. The first round of deadline dates will be like October 5th, which is about, you know, just about 30 days prior to the election. You need to check your calendar and check your county election offices, state websites to make sure you meet those registration deadlines. But yeah, those deadlines are approaching. And so it's encouraging everybody to, if they're not registered, get registered to vote, because that's the first step to participate. If you're already registered and you vote in every election, we still encourage you to go online and check your registration. You can make sure your address is up to date. And so if you've changed your name or you've moved, you really do need to go online and make sure that you're ready to vote. Make sure your address is up to date. It's very important because that's the first step.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. We're getting into the heat of an election. People say, you know what, I'm going to vote. They show up on November the 3rd and they can't vote because they forgot to register or they moved and they didn't re-register. So there are tools available today where folks can do that online. So explain to our listeners, if they need to register or they've moved and they need to re-register, tell them how they can do that.
So, yes, I mean, things have really changed over the last decade. We now have, you know, online voter registration where you, particularly if you have a photo ID or driver's license from the state where you are at, you can go online and register to vote. Really, it just takes a few moments. It's really easy. You could also download a paper application. If, you know, you could fill that out if you like to, you know, some people still like to use the paper and send it in. So there's multiple ways that you can register to vote. And, you know, once you're set, you're ready to go. You need to start thinking about how you want to vote on Election Day or during early voting.
So, Donald Palmer, any idea of the number of Americans who are eligible to vote? What percentage of them have actually taken the time to register so they can vote?
Well, there's about 25% of eligible citizens that are not registered to vote. And so one of the things that we encourage, you know, election officials encourage, you know, is to talk to your friends, your family, your circle of influence, your church. And not everybody understands the process. They may be confused about, you know, how do I register to vote? When do I need to register to vote? How do I vote? And so, you know, if you're listening to this and you are aware of the process, you need to help your neighbor, help your friends who may not really understand the process. And that's part of why we do National Voter Registration Day, is to encourage people to, you know, participating in the process is also getting your friends and your family and your neighbors to participate as well, and not being afraid to do that. It gives folks something additional to do, because I think as part of a citizen, most folks want to be registered to vote. They want to vote. They want to sort of be aware of the issues, but it doesn't have to stop there. You know, you could reach out to, you know, your sphere of influence, I like to call it,
yeah,
and encourage them to also participate, to perhaps even be a poll worker or work with the political party of your choice.
Right. And that's one of the things we're doing with our challenge that we put out there for people to take the challenge to pray, vote, and stand, is to not only be registered in voting themselves, but to encourage others that are in their, as you say, sphere of influence, so that they will register and cast an informed ballot as well, because that's how our republic works. It's not a spectator sport. It requires participation. And as you pointed out, you cannot do so unless you're registered to vote. And again, Mr. Palmer, a lot of people hesitant because of the coronavirus and, you know, everything's different this year. But again, these tools are online, so they can do it online.
They can. And, you know, the coronavirus, you know, it's made a lot of the campaigns, but also election officials, go virtual. But there, like I said, there is online registration. If you decide to vote, you know, have a plan. If you want to vote absentee, you could usually go online and see what your options are to request that. You know, the EAC has worked with the Centers for Disease Control to make sure our polling places are clean and safe. There have been reports that there have not been any cases of COVID transmitted. There were some studies done in Wisconsin. And so those polling places will be open and open for business. Depending on your state or county, you may or may not have early voting, which is in-person voting in the week or two prior to Election Day, mm-hmm. so that you can plan ahead. And if you want to vote in that way, you can do so. But again, sort of us having to deal, you know, from a virtual context here, a virtual environment, you do see more online voter registrations. You do see more online absentee requests, because there is still a little bit of fear and trepidation, but the polling places will be open and the poll workers will be there trained to help voters participate in the process.
And we're going to encourage people to participate in that process. Donald Palmer, thanks so much for joining us today here on Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
So, folks, that's why you need to register and you need to vote. So I would encourage you to take the challenge to pray, vote, and stand. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and take the challenge. Share that challenge with your friends, all right? And this is a part of encouraging others to be registered and to be informed. And to talk about some more of the resources we have available for you to help you in that process is Brent Kylan. He is the Vice President of FRC Action, and he joins me now. Brent, welcome back.
Tony, good to be with you. Thank you.
Before we jump into the tools available for voter registration, I just want to, again, remind folks that tonight begins the Values Voter Summit. It's going to be a great lineup. We have Senator Josh Hawley will be joining us. He's a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's drawn a line in the sand when it comes to the next Supreme Court justice. He's going to be with us. Also going to be talking with the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. What are some of the other things people can expect tonight at the Values Voter Summit?
Well, Tony, we're really excited about the summit this year. First year that we've been digital, also able to offer it free for the first time this year. So anybody can access this from anywhere. Just go to the website, valuesvotersummit.org. But the theme for this year is pray, vote, stand. And just so excited about that, Tony. There's a verse I've heard you quote often, the men of Issachar who had understanding of the time. And so they knew what they should do. And I think that's really what we're hoping people will walk away with from the summit this year. First of all, how do we interpret the times? There's so much going on. You know, you really don't get the full picture when you're just watching the news. And so we are bringing in top leaders, just like you mentioned, Tony, top experts to really help us understand how do we interpret the things going on and the chaos going on. But then with that understanding, how should we act? And so based off of that, we will have a lot of really great tools for you to get involved, to vote, of course, but also get other people involved, how to inform the vote, how to share things like voter guides and party platforms, how do we go deeper and articulate the biblical worldview for why we believe what we believe, and just so much more, Tony. So like you said, starting tonight, going through Friday night, and then we also have some activist training Saturday morning that we're looking forward to.
And let's talk about that voter registration, Brent Kylan, because those are some of the online tools that are available, especially when we have a number of community impact teams in churches. And I know there's still, you know, some folks not meeting, but others are. What tools are available to help in this last minute drive to do voter registration?
That's right, Tony. We have some great tools to walk you through that at our website, prayvotestand.org /register, or you can just go to the prayvotestand.org website and find the voter registration there right on the homepage. But what you'll find there are a few different things. First of all, we have a resource on just how to register. The vast majority of states offer online voter registration. So if that's a possibility in your state, it'll walk you right through that. It will take you right there. Voter registration does not take a lot of time. It in most states literally takes just a couple of minutes. And even if your state doesn't online offer the online voter registration, it will still walk you through how to do that. And you can do that, something you can do for yourself or even share with a family member or a friend. But something else we have, Tony, is a lot of people want to kind of take that information and get other people involved, given how important the time is right now and how important these elections are. So you can host a voter registration drive, whether that be at your church or your community group. We have a guide there. It's a five-step how-to, just offering some tips on how you can do that. How you can hold a voter registration drive. This is something I've done. Anybody can do it. Just you know, practical things. How do I set this up? Who do I contact? You do need to know how your state does, what some of the rules are for voter registration in your state. So how do you make sure you understand those before you do that? And then the last thing that you'll find there is particularly if you're going to do something like voter registration in churches, a frequent question that will come up are those legal lines. What can I do as a pastor or a church? What can I do? Is this legal? And voter registration is absolutely legal. This is a nonpartisan activity, but we do have a guideline there, something for both pastors and churches, legally what you can do, what you can't do. So you can print that off. You can share that with the church. This has been reviewed by top attorneys in the country. So it's very good advice. And so, Tony, those are the tools, and really encourage people to explore those to get as many people involved right now as possible.
So those tools are available, and as we pointed out, voter registration is key. You can't participate if you're not registered. So number one, need to register, but then lay down a marker and vote. We've talked about with a lot of the concern over the early voting by mail. A lot of people, some people still concerned about the coronavirus, especially if you're in a high risk category. Got it. I completely understand. There are other options besides voting by mail in most states, not all, but in most states you can early vote in person, usually a couple weeks before the election. So that is probably the preference, is to vote early in person. Second would be to, if you can, to actually vote on election day. But then the least desirable method is to put something in the mail. Now, some states allow you to early vote and drop your ballot off with the voter registrar, or they've got special places for it. But you want to maintain custody over that ballot as much as possible, right?
That's absolutely right, Tony. And the one thing I would just add to that, along the lines of the voter registration here, is of course you got to make sure that you're registered before you do all that. And a lot of people are surprised when they hear the numbers on this, but according to some recent George Barna data and research he has done, born again Christians. Just that group, born again Christians, 1 in 5 are not even registered to vote yet. So 20%. So if you're in a church, that number might seem high to you, but there's a lot of people that have to get this voter registration information just to get involved before they're able to do that. And there's still time left to do that in these states. There's still time left to become registered. And then according to his same study, 37% of born again Christians did not vote 4 years ago, and that's actually almost 40%, Tony. That's a number that should get a lot lower, and can get a lot lower if we all get involved.
All right, Brent Kylan, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
And folks, let me encourage you, take the challenge to pray, vote, and stand, and also tune in this evening, 8 p.m. Eastern time, for the Values Voter Summit. A great lineup of speakers. We'll have Sissy Graham Lynch, Senator Josh Hawley, Dr. Al Mohler will be with us, Ali Stuckey, Congressman Chip Roy, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, Walker Wildman, Dave Hoppe, Gary Bauer, Andrew Brunson, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and Congressman Mark Walker. So great lineup. Be sure and tune in tonight, 8 p.m. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do and you've prayed, prepared and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.